In this episode of the Smart City Podcast, I interviewed founder and director of the Urban Informatics Research Lab at QUT in Brisbane, Marcus Foth. Although the term Smart City wasn't around, Marcus has been involved in this space for over 10 years and worked in computer science before the internet became ubiquitous. He is passionate about bringing together people, places, and technology in a user-centric approach. We discussed a lot of exciting topics, including using technology to make a difference, how Australia is moving up in the smart city ranks, and how climate change and sustainability need to be at the heart of a smart city. We also discussed the next generation of personalized journey planners that would see me bumping into or avoiding my Facebook friends on my daily commute, depending on how social I'm feeling that day. As well as this, Marcus introduces a number of global networks embracing the smart city space that you, as the Smart City Collective, can check out and get involved in. As always, I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I enjoy making it.
It's the Smart City Podcast, whoa, with smart city experts, here we go. Connecting smart technology, both big and small. Smart cities are making life better for all. Big data, emerging trends, self-driving cars and more. The Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hi Marcus, how are you going today?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks, Zoe.
Perfect. So let's just get straight into it. We'll start with the past. Can you tell us a bit about your background and what you are passionate about?
Sure. That's quite a long answer, possibly. So we've been working in that space of cities for over 10 years now. My own background was originally in computer science. I studied computer science in Germany, and at that time it was already a bit of a exotic degree specialization because it contained a lot of media studies and digital media elements, which in the mid-90s was really quite hip and sexy and up and coming.
Yeah, I can imagine.
The internet back then wasn't really, you know, as commercially successful and as widespread as what it is now. But that kind of gave me a sense that it was really interesting for me to be exposed to those media communication studies parts of my degree and seeing those connections to the technology. And so then I came to Australia initially really to do a study abroad program. And one thing led to another. I eventually kind of stayed and enrolled in a PhD program. And so as part of that, I also embraced an interest in the built environment, in people living in cities, interacting in cities. And so it's a mix of people, place, technology. So I'm really passionate about very multi, but also kind of what we call transdisciplinary research approaches that bring different areas together. And so my original background in computer science has now been enhanced by also looking at the social sciences and the humanities. And then the third area is around architecture, urban design, urban planning, everything to do with urbanism and with cities. So it's kind of people, place, and technology and everything that is at that nexus that I'm passionate about.
Great. So what sparked your interest in smart cities?
I'd say I've already had an interest in that intersection, that combination of technology and the city much earlier, before that term smart cities even came about. So we call our research field urban informatics. And we've started this group here at QUT in 2006. So we've just had our 10-year anniversary last year. And around that time, and possibly a couple of years earlier when I started my own PhD, it was a moment when the internet became quite popular, and a lot of the research, but also a lot of the kind of technical and commercial developments, they pointed in this direction of the death of distance, of bridging distance, of the big words at that time were e-commerce, telework, distant education, and so forth. So it was about the way that cyberspace at the time and what Bill Clinton and Al Gore called the information superhighway, how those kinds of technological advancements could bring us all together, but bring us together in cyberspace. And I had, in a way, a feeling that that wasn't right. It was not going to be about humanity and society and cyberspace in this kind of virtual space, but it would actually provide really interesting opportunities in the real world. And so I didn't subscribe to this dichotomy of the virtual and the real. I thought that the online and offline will come together in really interesting ways and enhance our experience of place. So my interest in the smart city started much earlier, and I think around probably 2011, 2012, the term smart city came up that is now been used everywhere to describe this field. But there's actually a lot of work that happened not just here at QUT, but also with our colleagues across the world, a lot of research and development and a lot of interest in that space of what is now termed the smart city.
Oh, great. So are there any particular technologies that you've come across that you're really interested in exploring?
Definitely. So in the last decade or so, we've been focusing particularly on a social, on a people-led, on a user-centric approach to our work. So the technology usually comes in a bit later. We first kind of understand and we try to immerse ourselves in the city in order to understand the different interactions, the different challenges, the different opportunities. But as part of that, we've had, for instance, a focus on urban planning and particularly the community engagement that is part of urban planning decision making. And so the technologies that we've been exploring as part of that in the early days were around obviously mobile technology and mobile phones, smartphones, and what role and what impact they would have on enhancing community engagement. And more recently, it's also a more hybrid approach. We've developed what we call the Insta Booth, which is a portable structure that we can set up in places in the city, and it combines both online as well as offline, or both analog and digital means of engaging the public in questions about future urban proposals, for instance. So people can actually have a better say in those proposals. So the technologies that are involved in that example, for instance, some of them are actually quite analog. It's about the written or even sketches, and then the more digital parts are with regards to projections. We're using iPads in there. We also use interactive installations in order to convey other ways of knowledge and other ways of expertise that the public might bring to it. And then kind of fast forward more to today, I'm quite excited and interested in what blockchain technology and distributed ledger technology can do for cities. And the list goes on. There's obviously a lot of exciting technical developments with regards to machine learning, with regards to big data and algorithmic analysis, with regards to artificial intelligence, with regards to the Internet of Things and different devices. But I think one thing that I've learned in all of this time is that we shouldn't allow ourselves to be blinded by the shiny new objects and these different devices. I think it's really important to focus on the actual both problem spaces as well as opportunity spaces, and then think of technology as a means to make a difference.
Yeah, definitely. So you've already touched on this a little bit, but we'll talk about what's happening with you right now. So some of the projects and things you're working on, you mentioned the Insta Booth, is it?
Yeah, the Insta Booth was a recent project that we've been building and working on.
Yeah, great. Do you want to either delve a bit deeper into that or talk about some of the other things and projects you're working on at the moment?
Sure. I might kind of mention a couple of other projects. There's so many great things going on. It's kind of one of the benefits of being an academic that you have exposure and the freedom ability to really curate your work in that way. So some of the other things we are currently thinking about and are putting together, one is a project that looks specifically at the way people in the city use their mobile phones and other digital devices and the impact that has on how people not only traverse, navigate, and negotiate spaces, so the impact it has on geography, but also on the way that people are coming together in cities. So I'll give you a simple example. If you use a journey planner to get you from A to B, or you're trying to figure out how to get from A to B if you're in a new city, they're usually optimized for speed or for distance. So some of the experiments that colleagues have already been undertaking and that we are interested in as well is how we can add different variables and different search parameters into such interfaces. So if it's a journey planner, for instance, can we also have personalized journey planners that would optimize your journey, not for speed or distance only, but also, for instance, for the least carbon intensive way to get me from A to B? Or you might imagine that there is data available correlated to social media where I can say I want to have a social way home where I can increase my chances of bumping into people that I'm friends with on Facebook. Or it can be the reverse, that I say I've had a bad day or I got a cold. I don't want to actually see anyone. Find me the incognito way to get me from A to B where I decrease my chances that I bump into anyone that I'm friends with on Facebook. And so by allowing people to be more exposed to the kinds of search algorithms, not just when it comes to place, but also when it comes to recommender systems and searches for finding other people and finding other content online, we actually are able to counter a trend that has been already studied in media and communication studies, and the term used a lot also in the press and in newspapers is filter bubbles and echo chambers. So the fact that these algorithms that we rely on increasingly, not just online, but also in the city, they're usually optimized for like-mindedness, for sameness, and for homophily. If you, for instance, think of your newsfeed on Facebook, there's a particular interest that Facebook as a platform wants you to come back, wants you to have a good experience, and wants to curate a newsfeed on the Facebook side that gives you an enjoyable experience. Now, if you extend this, though, into the city, it all of a sudden means that the kinds of places that we are exposed to tend to be those where we meet the same people, the same ideas, and it provides a level of familiarity. Now, that may not be something bad overall, but it actually renders a reduced version of the city. So we are less likely to be exposed to new places. We are less likely to discover new people and new ideas. And so that is particularly problematic when Australia and Australian cities want to be innovative and want to make the most of a national innovation agenda, because innovation thrives on diversity. And if the algorithms that are in place are sorting us into certain categories, it actually keeps us apart.
Yeah, oh, that's really interesting. So basically setting up algorithms to enhance that diversity rather than, if I like to travel this certain route and I've done that for the last, 3 weeks or whatever, I can choose a different route so then I can add some diversity into my life.
Yeah, that's right. And so at the moment we're on a kind of trajectory where we are exploring this with regards to places, but I think it'll be more interesting and challenging once we actually try and also apply this to the social layer and then the actual discursive or content layer, where it's about people's interactions and conversation. So once we're able to get to that level, it'll become quite interesting, because there is some projections that say that the city will become the fifth estate. So in addition to the three estates of polity in Australia or elsewhere in the world, with the internet and media being seen as the fourth estate, the city might actually be something like a fifth estate where some of these discourses come together.
Yeah, great. And do you use the term city to not just be the big city, but, those regional centres as well? Does the same theory apply there?
I wouldn't necessarily say that the same theories apply, but you're correct in that we have an interest in a very diverse understanding of cities. So not just the big metropolitan areas. In fact, I'm today just putting together a proposal that specifically focuses on regional Australia, and we've been working with councils in regional areas, particularly in the Northern Rivers area of New South Wales and up in Cairns and the Tablelands. So our work doesn't focus on Brisbane, Melbourne, and Sydney, or on the larger cities that are usually associated with the term smart city, but we're also actively thinking about how this translates into other urban as well as peri-urban and regional contexts.
Very good. So leading on to that, where do you think that Australia ranks when it comes to smart cities?
It's probably relatively mixed, and it also depends what kinds of expectations or what kinds of indicators you use for your ranking. So if it's about the level of interest and the level of awareness that something is going on, I think Australia has really caught on to the fact that the smart city agenda is not going to go away anytime soon. It's actually very important to engage with that agenda and to understand it better. However, a more differentiated view actually looks at the smart city agenda critically. And so the first experiences and the first levels of maturity when it comes to applying smart city technology, I think a lot of them were at that kind of level of window dressing and investing in technology because it would be seen as the right thing to do, particularly by a lot of the consulting accounting firms and by the technology providers. So I don't think that a very simplistic notion of just investing in public Wi-Fi, in smart streetlights, in screens and public displays is sufficient just to tick the box of, oh, we've now turned ourselves into a smart city. I think a lot of cities in Australia are now starting to make sense of these early examples and are trying to reach a more mature level of development. And I think we're quite excited working with some of those councils and local governments. And so that more mature level, I think, is about not just the technology piece. It's actually about looking at the business and the social piece more closely, where technology becomes a means to an end rather than the starting point of the conversation. So, for instance, my colleague Adam Beck, he's heading up the Smart Cities Council. The credo that they use is livability, workability, and sustainability. And you can see that in those three words, they are very broad, but they actually encapsulate much more an impact and engagement-driven aspiration for smart cities rather than one that is technocratic. And I think that's something that Australia is still lagging behind internationally, but we are quickly catching up, I think. And so that's really useful to see that a lot of the cities that we are dealing with, they are trying to reach that level of maturity and are moving up, I suppose, in the ranks of genuinely smart cities.
Yeah. That's a really exciting time to be in Australia, I think. Where do you think a good place is to trial this type of, well, not even technology, but the smart city, objective? Like in the big cities or in particular cities for whatever different reasons or in the regional areas? I guess it depends on which technology we're talking about. But could you give us a bit of insight into which areas you think are good places to utilize the smart city objective?
You're right. It does depend on what priorities have been identified, and so it's difficult to have like a universal answer for this. But in my experience, it seems that the smaller local governments are able to be a bit faster, more agile, and more responsive to some of these opportunities and developments than the larger local governments. So we've been working with both the larger and the smaller, and it seems that with regards to doing pilots, experiments, with regards to getting approvals from the different governance structures within a council, it seems that the smaller councils, especially in that kind of sweet spot between metropolitan areas and rural areas, so the likes of Logan City Council, Gold Coast City Council, Ipswich, Moreton Bay, if I think of examples here in Southeast Queensland, they're actually very switched on, and it's probably a little bit easier for them just in terms of their structure and their size to react to these opportunities. Having said that, there's also really great work that is being done in the larger metropolitan areas. I think their response or strategy has been to designate either specific projects or specific areas. So I think it's quite interesting that, for instance, in Melbourne, recently the Melbourne Innovation District has been launched, which is a joint venture between the City of Melbourne, RMIT, University of Melbourne, and a number of other partners. So it's kind of like a living lab, a designated area in the city where these kinds of smart city interventions, both the technical ones as well as those that might be much more based on urban policy reforms and different regulatory reforms, and I think both have to come together, where they can be trialed and assessed and evaluated.
Yeah. So let's talk about the future now. How do you think that we can better integrate across the disciplines, so government, industries, universities, for example? What do you think we're doing a good job? What are your thoughts on that?
I think we are doing a relatively good job, but there's always room for improvement. I do believe there is a bit of skepticism every now and then with regards to the research that happens at universities, not just here at QUT, but across the board. I'm working with colleagues at UNSW, at University of Sydney, at RMIT, at other universities across the country. And I think there's great work happening, and it would be fantastic to have better linkages between local governments and universities. In fact, in other places, those links have been formalized in not just on a project-by-project basis, but it actually is a much more ongoing and systemic way to connect the research and development in the university and tertiary education sector with benefits and outputs that are beneficial to cities. So one example that I really like is the City Studio Vancouver, which is a collaboration between the City of Vancouver in Canada, in British Columbia, and the main universities, Simon Fraser University and the University of British Columbia. And so they have set up a classroom inside Town Hall. And so there's cohorts of students of various different disciplines coming together each semester, and they are paired up with public servants, and they work on real-world projects. And each of these projects is quite specific and bespoke, and they improve the city on an ongoing basis. So there's this ongoing mechanism to go about city-making and enriching the city with these different cohorts of students. Now, I think something like that would be really useful to explore and how it can be tailored to the Australian context, because there is, as I said, a lot of great work happening with not just universities, but also with within the startup and entrepreneurship community, in the arts and design world, with a whole bunch of different communities. And I think what I've noticed is that the most progressive local governments, they are actually not only making it possible for these groups to do their work, but they also think, well, this is really useful for our mission of improving the city as well. And so they are partnering with them and collaborating and become facilitators of these connections. And so I think the way that these frameworks are coming about of citizen co-creation, they will be play an important role in the smart city agenda moving forward and reaching new levels of maturity, especially I think when it comes to the existing models in local government and how they are increasingly being questioned. I'm thinking of, for instance, procurement. Procurement is a big topic right now in the smart city agenda, and a lot of people are pointing the finger at this notion of open innovation. And that's where these ideas and frameworks like citizen co-creation and social living labs play a key role, because they actually are then enabling local governments to do things differently.
Yeah, no, sounds like a really interesting model, and something that, I mean, it would take a bit of a change in thought, but would be pretty simple to implement in a place, you know, somewhere in Queensland. So
yeah, it's definitely. Really, if listeners are interested and just Google City Studio Vancouver, there's some amazing works being done, and they have their portfolio of projects online.
Yeah, excellent. So do you think Australia already is in certain aspects, or how can we become some of the leaders in the smart city space?
I think in different ways we are already leading the conversation. There's a lot of colleagues that are doing fantastic work, both in the in the research space, in the commercial space, in the local government space, and those working across. That's also evident by a lot of the invitations of Australian key thought leaders being invited to go overseas. So it's not just that we are learning, obviously, a great deal by looking at examples elsewhere in the world, but it's also that Australian examples are increasingly being used on the international stage, particularly because we have this high rate of urbanization where we are, I think, just over 90% with regards to our very specific geography. And I think at the same time, as I said earlier, it's always useful to kind of think of other kinds of opportunities where we're not quite leading yet and we can still learn from others. So one of the things that is trying to facilitate this mutual kind of peer learning is the Open and Agile Smart Cities Network, which was an idea that started by a colleague of mine at Aarhus University in Denmark. And by now it's turned into a global network of cities that want to become smart cities, but they want to become smart cities in an open and agile manner. So this is a community of practice, if you like, of cities and city representatives that are coming together to talk about their experiences, to exchange ideas and exchange also solutions and proposals. And they form these networks, both within regions as well as internationally. And so the OASC, the Open and Agile Smart Cities Network, is definitely one of those where Australia is now caught on and has started signing up to membership. But we are always open for other cities to join this network as well. It's a non-commercial network. It's pretty much a non-profit organization that is in the pursuit of ensuring that we don't have a vendor lock-in when it comes to smart city standards. But then it's also going in the direction of implementing ideas and implementing smart city proposals.
Yeah, great. So what are the emerging trends that you see that people aren't talking about at the moment?
I think the biggest one that, in a way, people are talking about, but they're not talking about all the kinds of things under the veneer, under the bonnet, is climate change and sustainability. So climate change and sustainability is being talked about, but I think on a very superficial level. This morning I saw a news article, I think, about LED streetlights and how they've been heralded as one of the cornerstones in the smart city agenda, particularly for their ability to bring about more sustainable cities. But there is a notion in economics that's called the rebound effect, or the Kazum-Brooks postulate. So if you enable a consumer of energy to save energy, the effect is that they will just use the surplus in using energy for other means and for other purposes. And so this is exactly what we are seeing with LED lights, for instance. The cities that have installed those, they're actually using the savings in order to install more lights. And so the actual net effect is that we're not reducing our energy consumption at all. In fact, it goes up. And so this is quite an alarming trend when we not only see those developments, but we also are lacking these conversations about genuine sustainability efforts that are about reducing our footprint and reducing the impact we have on greenhouse gas emissions. And so we have to have a conversation about the use of energy by those devices. We have to also have a conversation about a lot of the batteries that are used in mobile digital devices and Internet of Things. Those batteries, especially if they are lithium ion based, they contain cobalt, and cobalt is a challenging mineral because the supply chains are not regulated. So they the majority of the cobalt, if it's not sourced from Australian mines, comes from the Congo, for instance, and there's a number of material, and specifically one piece that the Washington Post produced, an investigative journalism piece about the mining of cobalt and how it actually puts those mining workers in very precarious situations. And then if you kind of follow the supply chain to the other end, because of planned obsolescence, a lot of these devices end up as e-waste, and we then ship them overseas to places in Malaysia, in China, and in Ghana, in Africa, and they just accumulate, but they are out of sight and out of mind. And I think one of these emerging trends definitely is how we can think about the smart city more in a sustainable manner that is genuine to these efforts of actually reducing our carbon footprint, reducing our energy footprint, and also how humanity can make a net positive contribution to the environment rather than just one that is driven around the idea of efficiency.
I'd like to delve into that a bit more deeply. Maybe we'll have to have another podcast episode just on that, because the environment space, definitely I think it's not missing in the conversation, but I think maybe not not the overarching theme, but I think smart city space, we need to think not just about right now, but what we reuse and also the lowering emissions and the supply chain and all those types of things. So maybe we can have another chat about that.
Yeah, I agree with you. That would be great.
Yeah, cool. Okay. So how can people connect with you, anyone listening to this podcast?
There's a number of ways. I'm on Twitter, which is usually the easiest way to connect with me, literally by following me. My Twitter account is Sunday 9 p.m., 9, the number 9. We also got these two research entities, the research group around smart cities and urban informatics. Our website is urbaninformatics.net and the Twitter account is urbaninf. And then we are embedded within the larger QUT Design Lab, which is the research entity that hosts our work and also does fantastic research work in other areas such as design robotics and health and well-being and so forth. And so the website for the Design Lab is QUT.design and the Twitter handle is at QUT Design.
Yeah, great. I'll put all that in the show notes so people can connect with you.
Fantastic.
Thanks so much, Mark. I've learned so much, and I'm sure the listeners have as well. But yeah, definitely, I think we've got a lot more topics that we can unpack there. Yeah, really exciting. So thanks for talking to me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Zoe. I'll send you a couple of links as well for the show notes. And yeah, perfect. Very interested in hearing your feedback and feedback from listeners and having a dialogue about some of these issues.
Perfect. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Zoe.
It's the Smart City Podcast. Whoa.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart City Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes can be found at thesmartcitypodcast.com. If you have any questions or comments for me or any of my guests, connect with me via email, zoe@thesmartcitypodcast.com or via the socials. I'm on Twitter and Facebook at Smart City Pod. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.